pack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. It is the return of the Judges Table podcast here at Reality TV Wrap Ups. I am your host, Antonio Mazzaro, normally joined by three co-hosts. Today, this week, joined by two very special co-hosts. That's why it sounds a little different here this week. First of all, I'm with Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
I am doing quite well, Antonio. I am doing very, very well. I'm feeling a lot of heart and soul that I plan on putting into this podcast. I plan to be very inspired by the absence of Mike Bloom today.
Well, speaking of heart and soul and the absence of Mike Bloom inspiring, we're also without Kurt Clark. I'm not sure if there's an Emily Fox curse. Are you aware of this at all?
I have not heard of an Emily Fox curse, although every time Emily and I say that we're going to do like a recurring podcast, it seems to not happen. I think that's more of a Wiggler curse than an Emily curse. I'm not going to put this on Emily, but hey, Emily Fox is here. My wife is here in the building.
Yeah, I am here, and I have a bone to pick with you.
Why?
It's not a curse for me. Blame it on the woman, of course.
No, I literally just said I'm
not
blaming it on you.
I finally get a chick on this podcast, and this is what you do to me?
All right. Well, in fairness, Haley Strong was here a few weeks beforehand, so
but I'm glad to join the sausage fest nonetheless.
Oh god, going full Fox. We don't go full Bloom on this podcast, but we may go full Fox.
We've mentioned now heart, soul, sausage, chicken, what else?
I believe a bone was thrown in there.
It was a wishbone to pick
at one point.
How many proteins can we get into this conversation?
A lot of protein.
Don't elaborate on that.
No more proteins at all. We're not gonna do that. So okay. Yeah, we're back here. Thank you very much for your patience. It's a little differently sounding because we're looking at each other's faces right now.
Yeah, the way that we are podcasting this week is incredible. So Antonio is in New York City right now. Antonio, traditionally in Kentucky.
That is correct.
That is typically where you are. Yep. This time you are here in New York. You were up here for New Year's. We've been hanging out quite a bit. We figured this would be a fun opportunity to do some live in the studio podcasting, such as it were. But my studio is nothing compared to the Rob Sesternino studio. He's got a real system set up. We, right now, we just have a microphone in the middle of a table, and we are all huddled around it, just kind of staring at the microphone as though it is our maker. Like, this is the thing that created us.
Yeah, I feel like after this podcast, we've, like, learned a little bit more about each other.
Yes, specific smells.
Yeah, specific smells. I mean, like
the heat level of breath.
The proximity that we are to each other, it's like we're, you know, wielding a Ouija board is, like, what we should be doing. It feels very midnight society.
Yeah. Can we get a Katsuji board?
We could get a Katsuji board. That would be very different. What would it say? What would the Katsuji board like advise you to say? Where would it go? It'd be all over the place. Too many letters.
Yeah,
too many letters and probably something stereotypical, but that would go away.
That would go away. No, he would make the stereotype go away. Very, very good job on that.
So just again, thank you everyone for your patience here with this. Hopefully it sounds fine. We did extensive testing.
We spent like an hour getting to this really terrible setup.
Yoga poses were enforced. The cushions were thrown in the ground and then removed. Pants were taken on and off. It was a little bit awkward.
Yes, we were jeanless at one point.
Yes, it was definitely a jeanless situation. That's difficult to say. Here we are though. Thank you. If you have not listened to this podcast before, normally we talk about Top Chef every week. You can subscribe to what we do. The iTunes link for this podcast is at robhasawebsite.com/tcpodcast. If you have a general podcatcher app that you want to use, the raw RSS feed or XML feed is robhasawebsite.com/topchef. So either of those links will get you to the subscription page. We'd love it if you could subscribe. Leave us a review on iTunes. That will help other people see the podcast and know, yeah, we know what we're talking about. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. We recap last week. John with his mac and cheese wins. Guys, were you satisfied with last week? We didn't really talk about this at all. But
well, you didn't talk about this at all because you were missing from this podcast last week. And actually, Emily has not talked about Top Chef at all on the air, period. So I'd love to get some of her thoughts on how things are going this season. So kind of just broadly, Emily, where are you at with Top Chef season 14?
I mean, I'm feeling it. I'm loving the dichotomy of new people versus old people. That's fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there have been some people that have been knocked out maybe a little prematurely, and we've also seen some people that might not have or should not have stayed as long as they have. So I think we're in the process of really culling, like, a very, very good group of people at this point. It's been fun to watch. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
I think that's kind of what we were saying that Mike and Kurt and I were talking about last week on the podcast is we're kind of at this point where we know everyone decently well at this point. And there's been a lot of, you know, even the people who are maybe lesser drawn characters on television so far, some of those people have big wins under their belt. Like Silva wins this week. Jamie wins this week. So you're starting to get to know those people too.
Correct.
So I think that we are at a place now where, like, even if you don't love every single contestant, you know who everybody is. There's no, like, purple anybodies right now.
No, and thankfully not. I don't think we should work purple on this podcast or in Top Chef. I'm interested to know, Emily, you said there were some people that went home too early. Are you a big Sam's fan?
I love Sam. I mean, he's great.
He's a dreamboat.
No, it just brings me back to, what season was he? Season two? Season three?
Yeah, that's right.
Two. Yeah, and that brings me back to when I first started watching this show, and I loved it because of all of the people that were like sort of like these young, like handsome chefs. I mean, they still happen every season, but like, I don't know. There was like a special connection.
Yeah, I'm not sure why we're complaining when Jim's is on this season. He's the hottest human being on the planet, let alone Top Chef.
So everyone's familiar with Jim's and how I thought I heard Jim's. And that's how this started.
Jim's has become a thing. Emily gets full credit for catching the Jim's the first time.
Yeah.
Jim's has caught on.
Thankfully, Jim's is contagious, and now we've all caught the Jim's.
The Jim's. We all
especially
have a case
at this
Jim's.
Proximity to one another.
Yes. Yeah, if one of us had the Jim's, now we all have it. That's for sure.
Usually you do not see me at the Jim's, but I am all on board with this, Jim's.
And Jim's, the thing is, though, Jim's is happily married, guys.
Yes.
So we have to
back off a little bit.
True.
Yes,
I
to Tracy's.
Good learning that.
Yeah, to Tracy's. Yes, that's right.
And Jim's has a restaurant that he wants to open. He doesn't get to cook for people. It just the people show up at the governor's house. They don't come specifically for Jim's. This is all going to change, when Top Chef is over, hopefully.
I mean, if it doesn't, then we've all done a poor job at life.
We are sat here in Brooklyn, New York. Would you guys help Jim's to get to Brooklyn?
I would help Jim's to get to Brooklyn.
Scout locations.
Yeah.
And you would probably want him in your neighborhood.
I would take Jim's on a pizza tour. Not that he needs one from me, but I would happily take him around
Everyone
and show him the sights.
Everyone needs a pizza tour from you.
You know, it is a pretty good pizza tour if you guys are in New York.
No, Antonio basically has had like a split of that. Like, we had pizza earlier.
We've been showing Antonio some good New York eats.
That is very true.
We went to Pock Pock. We got the Pock Pock on. We got some Emmy Squared pizza today. Everything is going really, really well.
None of whom are sponsoring this podcast.
No, we didn't
mention them anymore. Should we call in a Surgeon General, by the way?
I probably could use a consult with one. I'm in bad shape.
Well, I did think it was interesting. The Surgeon General, does he live in South Carolina, you think? Like, what is the connection to South Carolina? Oh, I know what it is. We had Sheldon and we had Amanda there.
Surgeon General is there just to generally check in.
Surgically speaking.
On their backs.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, we need a bat. Yeah, exactly.
Is this Surgeon General the Top Chef equivalent of the Dr. Joe? He is just going to be a character that's going to be here throughout Top Chef history moving forward.
I hope so. That would be nice. Although I think we're probably going to see a new Surgeon General.
Okay. Well, we don't need to go.
But we don't know what the Surgeon General's connection to this challenge or Top Chef in general, should we say, was. But the Surgeon General does show up here, Dr. Vivek Murthy. And we have what is ultimately a healthy challenge. It involves elements of exercise.
Right.
It involves vegetables. Emily, what did you think of this challenge design? Were you satisfied to see this classic comfort foods redone in a vegetable style with exercise in between?
I mean, I think it's kind of cute, but it's sort of very preachy and policy-based. I don't know if you're aware, but I've just finished one semester of food studies grad school.
Oh, my gosh.
So I feel like I'm, you know, directly linked into a lot of this policy talk where it comes to exercising and eating better. So I thought it was kind of like an interesting, you know, way of being like, hey, by the way, you're watching this show, but you should try eating healthier. But whatever. It was fine. It was good.
I thought it was kind of an interesting challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the... It felt unique, like, and also it felt like people were breaking the rules. Like, you see Katsuji grabbing like six apples at one point.
That's
it felt
one ingredient.
Like, does that count as one ingredient if you've got six of the same ingredient?
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like you're bending the rules just a touch. Not that it's something to complain too much about, but I thought that I think that the idea for it generated some interesting strategic choices. To talk about the other Emily, not the one who is in this room, but the one who is on the show, I really liked what she was talking about, how, like, I'm going slowly. Every time I'm going to grab an ingredient, I'm thinking about what the next ingredient is going to be. So I'm building this dish one ingredient at a time, and, you know, kind of inspires some creative flexibility in the cooking process. So I really loved her approach to the challenge. I thought that was cool. And all of those comfort foods I would have liked to have eaten probably in their actual version.
In their normal
yeah,
form.
Yeah, yeah. And then Sheldon kind of eating the dirt.
Oh, that was tough. Yeah. That was tough. Poor that Sheldon. Really sucked. This has been really difficult for Sheldon.
I did
Sheldon.
Not see the Surgeon General reach over and help him on that one.
The Surgeon General. Sheldon, no!
Yeah, exactly.
Because he, like everyone, is a huge Sheldon fan.
I don't know what's going on with Sheldon this season. I love Sheldon. We've seen a lot of near misses or scares about, they keep showing it in the previews or,
yeah.
Oh, Sheldon takes a tumble or Sheldon's going to go to the doctor or Sheldon, it sounds like Sheldon is in a lot of pain. He's had some issues, but do you guys think that we're going to see Sheldon eventually leave this season? Is that why we're seeing this over and over?
This was something that Mike and I talked about a lot at the end of the podcast last week, that we could see that this roller coaster might not be over for Sheldon. You know, last week there was the whole trip to the hospital and kind of really making you think in the preview for that episode that this could be a medevac. We could have somebody who is going to be removed from Top Chef for medical reasons. That did not happen. He comes back. He's talking about how he's basically just on steroids.
Yeah.
He's not actually fixed up.
That doesn't solve anything.
It doesn't feel it. And it's not like a long-term fix. It's, you know, it's a short-term fix. And who knows how long something like that can hold. And I know even with the preview for this week's episode that we ended up seeing, where Sheldon wipes out, in the build-up to that, I think that there was some fear of, oh, God, so is this Sheldon thing really going to continue? And he wipes out, and it's just a moment, right? Like, it's resolved pretty quickly.
Right, it's nothing.
It's
nothing
in
the episode. It was embarrassing, but it was nothing in the long term that we're seeing for Sheldon.
But why is it on the show if, like, not to just, like, keep reminding us that, like, Sheldon is, like, a very fragile contestant right now?
Yeah, he's, like, pratfalling. And my question is, Emily, Josh, either of you, did we even see Sheldon's comfort food? He had tuna casserole. He didn't know what it was. I don't think we actually saw them sample it.
Yeah, I have no memory of it.
Yeah, I think he was trying to put... Yeah, no, I don't remember it at all.
Yeah, I don't think we saw it. So, and this is not the first time we haven't seen Sheldon's food. And yet, here we are. Like, I don't 100% know. I believe the same thing. When we get into the Elimination Challenge, Sheldon is near the top, and I didn't think he was featured as heavily as the other two. So I don't know if they're not. I just don't know what's going on with Sheldon's story. So it's something to put a pin in.
100%.
We talked about it, as you point out. You and Mike talked about it last week. But you talked about it in the idea of, we're going to see this next week. It looks like Sheldon is not done. And you said roller coaster. We saw the movie Fear last night, so we don't want to talk about roller coaster.
We did. Wild Horses.
Because Wild Horses couldn't drag me away, cover or not. But here we are this week with Sheldon on his roller coaster, and we didn't even see his tuna casserole. So I don't know. I don't really know what's going on there. We had all these other comfort food dishes being dressed up, some of which looked a lot like their counterparts, some of which looked really ridiculous.
Yeah, what were some of your favorites, Antonia? What did you really like?
I thought the Sloppy Joes looked really good. Honestly,
Emily's nodding. She was into the Sloppy
Joe.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't really screw that up, though.
You can't screw up a Sloppy
Joe.
You just
have to get the right seasonings in there and then the right tomato base. And then other than that, like, what are you doing here? You're just scrambling up, like, a protein of some sort.
Part of what was helped by that is that I think Jamie recognized exactly what he needed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got this woke son that we've heard about.
Yes.
Like, his son is, like, a vegetarian since birth or since the age of three. And Jamie really looks up to him. So I think you're right. I think Jamie knew specifically, look, I'm not afraid of this ingredient.
Right.
A lot of these people are afraid of the ingredients. I mean, are not even using other proteins.
Yeah.
You see what Katsuji's doing, making like a squash spaghetti and squash meatballs. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
A little over the top.
But the people who know how to know what they're doing here, I mean, you look at like a sofritas kind of thing. Like Jamie's taking a crumbled tofu, really seasoning it very well, putting it on a bread that makes it delicious, and I think it works really well. So that one definitely stood out to me. I don't know. Anything else stand out to you, Emily?
I mean, I remember the things that didn't look so good.
Sure, what is
so,
your, what
like
that?
The stroganoff, because you're just like, oh, God, why? I don't know.
It wasn't even in the bottom three, and yet it didn't look like stroganoff to me. It looked like some kind of a soup. I don't know. Padma gave it the great side eye, too.
Right, of course.
You cook with these ingredients? Oh, sure. Yeah. You cook stroganoff? Nope.
Yeah.
Nope!
Yeah. And I also enjoyed like the Indian side eye that she gave John, being like, you put curry in this because we're Indian?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, snap.
Teasar baiting for sure in that moment. Like, you're going to pop one of these days, John, and I'm going to apply as much pressure as I possibly can to get you there. Hashtag good television.
Emily, was that good Padma for you? Do you like Padma? Are you a fan of the Padma?
Emily loves Padma.
I like her. I just feel like she doesn't open her mouth enough when she talks.
Wow. Yeah. That feels harsh.
Tell me how you feel about the smile on the Mona Lisa.
That feels really harsh.
I mean, there's nothing else wrong here. I mean, I think she's great. She's done a wonderful job hosting this show for the most part. And I think there's not really much else to complain about. But other than that, I mean...
that's your Padma?
Oh, my God. I thought Padma was sitting right across from me.
Oh, my God.
She just has, like, this energy that's, like, very legit chill.
She's very calm.
Yeah.
Very calm.
Like, it's this classy air of above it all, but yet better than us yet one of... She's like Jesus.
She walked...
Is that why she was the one that decided not to have the missing Jamie... Like, to have the missing Jamie plate at the end?
Oh, maybe.
She was like, I'll take this.
Interesting.
Don't worry, everyone else.
Self-sacrifice.
I've got it.
Yes.
Fun fact, Padma is actually translated. It just means savior.
Is that right?
No.
Oh, you just made that up? I would have believed it, clearly.
Yeah, I know. So... Oops. Speaking of not savory, though, I really cannot get over it. I'm sorry, Katsuji spaghetti and meatballs. You can make spaghetti with spaghetti squash. You can make actual...
Right.
Like people that eat like a paleo diet. That's a big
zoodles.
Thing. Yeah, zoodles, right. But those did not look like... that was like a mandolini or something. Yeah. It was kind of like...
Well, what did he do with the pasta? Did he have actual pasta? Or
no. Yeah. No. Right. Which, by the way, pasta, you could go gluten-free, you could go whole grain, you could go whole wheat. It wasn't a wheat-free challenge.
There was no reason that he couldn't have just made straight-up pasta.
Yeah, Jamie used bread for his sloppy Joe sandwich.
Yeah.
All right, well...
Which I did think was a kind of curious bread choice. I was surprised that he won, honestly. I thought that it was gearing up for an Emily win. Based on the way that she was putting that challenge together. I really thought that she was going to be... And she was in the top three, too.
Yeah.
But I thought that the bread for the Sloppy Joe was weird. And also, when the Surgeon General takes a big bite out of the Sloppy Joe, it looks like half of the Sloppy Joe fell
out. But that's the point.
I know, but then it looked like there wasn't, like, anything... It just felt like...
You got a problem with a manwich, Josh?
No,
yeah, you do.
I'm good with the manwich. I'm down with the manwich. But I feel like you want, like, a potato bun or something that's a little softer to soak that up. It just didn't seem like the kind of bread that was going to soak anything
up.
Who am I to judge? The dude won.
I was
going to
say, exactly.
If we're really talking about carbs here, can we talk about the Casey crumbles?
Yes. Yes, we did come down with the Casey crumbles, which was unfortunate because Casey is on my fantasy team, which by extension, Emily, is going to be your fantasy team. You're going to co-own this with me. We've got
Emily's face.
God.
Yeah.
We've got Casey, who's great, but get ready for this. We also got Jim's. So we're all in on the gyms train right now.
I can just tap out right now.
It's a really, really good fantasy squad. So we're riding hot with two really good chef testants in the mix. The Casey Crumbles was unfortunate that she couldn't get her crust together for her chicken pot pie, which is difficult to do already that it's a chicken pot pie and you can't even have chicken in it. I feel like you would have done well with this, Emily. Emily makes an incredible chicken pot pie. Like, what would you have done if you had to make a vegetable chicken pot pie?
I mean, I would just probably use all of, like, these great ingredients, regular, like, root vegetables, that kind of thing, and then just make a really killer crust to go over it. I don't think you need to have chicken in it to make it a chicken pot pie. It could be the exact same way. So... I don't know. I mean, that's just sort of how I feel about it. I think there are enough vegetarians out in the world that make vegetarian pot pies that come out really, really great. You don't need the protein like that, necessarily.
Yeah, I think that that's probably... I mean, I thought when I saw her distilling the flavors from the things that she was using, as she was doing some great things. She had all these, like, the leeks and the onion and the garlic and the carrots and the celery.
Leeks?
That all made sense to me.
Yeah, that's all classic stuff you would put in a pot pie.
And then it's probably just a victim of the quick-fire timing.
Yeah.
In that she's got to do this dough. She wants to make a flaky crust like you would have in a
pot
pie.
Got to make that dough, you know?
And it's just not... Got to make that money. And
yes.
It's just not playing out in that time frame.
Yeah.
And kudos to Casey. I love that she tried to own it.
I know.
Instead of saying, like, I ran out of time with the crust, she's like, I really wanted to bring the flakiness out. It's like, yeah, turn a negative into a positive. Turn that frown upside down.
Yeah, I was not buying that, though.
I'm not sure they were either.
I don't think anyone was buying that. I think it was kind of like, Casey, you clearly didn't make the crust well, and you're not, like, psyched about these crumbles, but I appreciate you trying to be excited about the Casey crumbles.
So, the Casey crumbles, there were some grainy issues with her meal. She was ultimately in the bottom three. We also had Katsuji in the bottom three. As we've talked about, the rounding out the bottom three, though, was the winner of the elimination challenge, Silva. Silva used seitan, which is something apparently John T. Starr has not spent as much time in Williamsburg as I have in the last week.
Right. No. Oh, well, I was just going to say you always want to be very careful when you evoke the power of seitan. Like, you just really don't want to mess with that unless you're really, really sure and your practical magic skills are down.
We've actually gone out to lunch with your mom before,
yes.
And she's been like, oh, I won't touch the seitan.
Oh, I'm very glad that you didn't bring up the fact that my mom is secretly a satanist. I didn't want to put that out there. in the universe. I was a little afraid that that's where we were going to go. Yeah. So, Antonio, just remember to edit this part out of the podcast where I confess that my mother worships Satan.
Okay, will do. Will do. I'm marking that time code. Got it. All right, so yeah, back to the lecture at hand. we'll talk about Satan in a very loose way in saying that John was unaware of these ingredients Silva was using. I've seen them all over the place.
Sure.
This is a very common thing. Silva at least seemed to be on the right track. Maybe there was a preparation issue. Hard to chew was the feedback. Silva was trying to do ultimately a chicken and dumpling, I think, with that seitan. It didn't really play very well. And so that was the bottom three. Silva, Casey, and Katsuji. Interestingly enough, another member of my fantasy team, Shirley, we didn't see her food either.
No, Shirley, we didn't see her food in this quickfire. We do see her.
She features great in the elimination challenge.
She features great in the elimination, isn't making top three there. Shirley just chilling, you know? Shirley's just like right there, you know, never too high, never too low, just hanging in there. Shirley's great. That's fantastic.
Speaking of never too high, what about gyms in college?
Why do you say that?
He was rebellious. He was rebellious. He was a vegetarian. He was doing all these crazy things.
That is how you stick it to the man, by the way.
Yes.
don't eat their protein.
Yeah. Don't eat their meats.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to assume too much about Jim's rebellious college youth. I do know, Emily and I had already watched the episode, and then Antonio came over and he watched the episode. And when we're starting to get into some of this stuff with Jim's and the fact that he is rebellious and he has this wife and he's, you know, talking a lot on the show, you were starting to get nervous that this is a lot of information that's out there potentially because we're about to lose Jim's in this episode. I felt like you were at the edge of your seat for Jim's throughout the entire night.
Very nervous. First of all, I mean, I think it's abundantly clear from every episode of this podcast, we all really love
huge Jim's fans.
And it is something where we talk a ton about edits and storytelling and what's happening on these sorts of things. We did get a lot of personal information and backstory on Jim's in this episode very early on in the episode. And then the elimination challenge comes up, and it's that classic Top Chef setup where you have a challenge where someone is poised to do really well at the challenge. Sometimes that goes really well. Sometimes it's Josh cooking pork in Seattle.
I thought you meant me.
Oh, no. Sometimes it just happens.
Oh, thank God it's not you. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's no problem. Josh has not cooked pork in Seattle, and that's not a metaphor.
Oh.
But I would say ultimately, yeah, your face is all red now, Josh. Oh, maybe you have.
This is uncomfortable.
You wake up in SeaTac. You wake up in all these airports, and what happens? No. So ultimately, we're not going to Fight Club. We're not going to talk about that.
Oh, but my God. I am Josh's pork in Seattle.
Ultimately, I just got nervous because this is a setup we've seen on Top Chef before, where someone looks poised to do really well at a challenge that they're going to crush. Maybe the overconfidence gets them. Maybe they have a very rigid view of what should happen. I should have known better. I should have known Jim's is a sweet angel sent straight from heaven.
Yeah.
And it was never going to go wrong.
Yeah, right. He's sent here just to enrich our lives, make everyone feel better and everyone feel really positive and make everyone feel like they can really do anything that they set their minds to.
Yeah, so thankfully, that's what we had instead of the other, which was, I was, to be fair, very nervous about. Just rounding out the quickfire, anything else from the quickfire? We did talk about the bottom three. We did talk about how Emily and Jamie ended up in the top. Emily, ultimately, for her meatloaf with the ground veggie protein, she used some mint and parsley there. We didn't talk about the final third member of the top three. If you've watched any of these episodes at all this season, I bet you can guess who it was.
Who was it?
Emily, do you remember who it was?
Could it have been Brooke?
Yep, I wasn't calling for that that harmony, but that worked out really well.
We did not plan that in advance. It just happened.
Yeah.
It just happened.
Brooks. Brooks was here.
Brooks was here.
She made a very good lasagna.
R.I.P.
She made a very good lasagna. It was creamy. She just used some tofu for some cream. Is there anything Brooke can't do, guys?
Well, no. Yes. It seems that the pairing of the sweet and savory might be problematic later on, and the over-inspiration. You know, inspiration overload, I think, is a hashtag that may have come up in this episode by the end of it.
Yeah, I did want to talk to you guys about that, because Brooke does really well here in the quickfire. As we progress into the elimination challenge, we see something we've now seen 2 out of 3 weeks from Brooke, which is we see something where she has some ideas. They seem like good ideas, but maybe they get clouded in the translation to the plate. We saw it 2 weeks ago with Emily, when Brooke and Emily were a team, and Brooke was spitballing all these ideas, and Emily wasn't really pushing back, and there wasn't really a real refined idea. It seemed like the same thing here, in that she added some things to the dish. It got away from her a little bit, it seemed like. Tom talked about how things got clouded. Is this something that's... Because in every other way, Brooke has crushed everything in this season.
Right.
This is the only chink in the armor. Emily, do you think that we're poised for a Brooke win, or do you think this is a story we're seeing build where Brooke may be pushing it too far in terms of, as Josh said, the over-simulation, the...
Yeah, I mean, I can see it both ways. The really interesting thing is that she presented her dish with Emily at the challenge as well. They were both standing next to each other when she did it.
Right, so 3 weeks
like,
in a row.
Yeah, so it's like curse of Emily. What's going on?
So there is an Emily curse.
There is an Emily curse. Just not
it's just not your Emily curse.
Yeah.
Got it.
But I think that there's, you know, it's tough, I think, for some of the people who have been on previous seasons to kind of come across and do something even more, you know, bold or crazy when they're competing like this. I think Brooke has so consistently crushed every single thing that it can get away from you, I think. It can mess with your head a little bit if you're not careful about editing yourself. So, I mean, maybe it's just a weakness here or there, and for the rest of the season, we'll see her go out strong. Who knows? I'm certainly rooting for her. I think she's fantastic. I love her food. We've been to her restaurant.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm all for it. But, like, yeah, I mean, you can get it. You can have these ingredients get a little ahead of themselves.
I think that that's something that, you know, going back to that, we have been to Emily and I went to Playa Provisions earlier. I was going to say earlier this year, but Happy New Year, everybody. We're in 2017. The best year. This year is going to be the greatest.
Great so far.
Fantastic year. We've been, and one of the things that Brooke serves at her restaurant is biscuits with like a caramel sauce as a starter. You know, that's basically something you get for the table on top of everything else. So it's kind of a strange combo maybe on the surface of it for something that's going to kind of start your meal that maybe sounds a little bit more desserty. So I think that she does have an interest in combining savory and sweet in interesting ways. And the biscuits with caramel sauce is awesome.
It was executed very well.
Really, really well. Yeah. But I think that maybe something, you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves talking about her performance in the Elimination Challenge, but I think maybe it's just something that doesn't quite get balanced super well every time. It's hard to find that right balance between bringing, you know, like a fruity flavor into something that's going to be like a meat-heavy dish.
But I also appreciate her taking risks. I think there are a lot of chefs that do play it safe throughout these challenges.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's, you know, yeah.
Brooke is well known. In her first season, she established this thing where she would combine ingredients that even the chefs that were these legendary chefs who had longer careers than she had at that point or had more repute than she had at that point were saying, oh my gosh, like I can't believe you thought to combine X and Y. The fact that you did that is brilliant. And if you go back and watch that season, she's doing that over and over and over again. And she finds her rhythm, I think, especially in the middle to late part of that season.
Yeah.
With Kristen Kish in that season, there was a lot of the... a lot of her and Brooke kind of going back and forth, and there were some other things that were happening there. But once Kristen goes out, Brooke is just dominant.
Yeah.
And it really is a situation where I think she really found her footing later in that season and really ran with it. She came out on fire in this season. I do wonder if she's, you know, going to – if some of these challenges are getting – I don't know. Brooke is somebody who's got so much going on, and she has mentioned even in this season as we've seen her on camera, like, why did I do this? Why did I come back?
Yeah.
So maybe there's some element of that as well.
Yeah.
That as you get into the competition, it wears on you. She certainly didn't seem to lack for inspiration in this challenge. That's what this challenge was all about. It was about inspiration. It's very similar to the Julia Child challenge we've seen in the past season of Top Chef. This is for Edna Lewis, who is described by some as a Julia Child type. That's what Padma said.
Of Southern cooking.
Southern cooking. She's the Julia Child of Southern cooking. That's what Padma describes. I had not heard of Edna Lewis. I will totally say that I was ignorant as to what was going on there. It seemed like most everyone among the chefs was as well, except for Jim's, of course.
Yeah. Jim's knew exactly who
Edna
Lewis was.
I love how he's like looking around being like, I know about her. Yeah. I've been you know, thinking about her forever. She's totally been an inspiration.
She's all freaking postage
stamp. Everybody else is like,
No, but yeah, you would see like, I mean, like Silva didn't know who she was. Who else didn't, who was completely
Sheldon.
Sheldon had no idea.
Yeah, Katsuji didn't know.
I think Jamie is the first person that they cut to after they establish what the challenge is. And Jamie says something to the effect of like, I don't know who this is.
Yeah, she says, I'm ashamed that this is the first time I've heard of her.
I'm ashamed that I don't know who she is, but I'm excited to, you know, create food that's inspired by somebody who I believe should be inspiring people and should be known more. So it seems like that was across the board. I thought that was interesting. I also had not heard of who Edna Lewis was. That she was completely off my radar, and I'm not that plugged in to that kind of scene, I guess. But it was interesting that the chefs were also sort of out of the loop on that. But it seems like, you know, a really kind of compelling tale about this woman.
It really does. Have you guys been to the Cecil? I guess one of the guest judge, Alexander Smalls, has a restaurant here in New York City, the Cecil.
We have not been.
No.
Okay. Well, seems like a place maybe to put on your radar.
Cecil.
Now. Because he's apparently also an opera singer. So that's
Cecil is an opera singer as well?
No, Cecil is someone.
Cecil is the Dark Knight from Final Fantasy IV. Sorry, that's only for five people.
Get out of here.
I apologize.
Leave.
Everybody. I'll leave.
I'm just being quiet and letting that play out the way it should.
Sorry, I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
I'm so sorry. I just fell on the floor like Sheldon. It is bad. I just sprawled out, wipe out, wipe
Final
out.
Final Fantasy IV.
Wipe out.
Now you need to make us some
Final Fantasy
pork.
Floor.
Yes. Tony Tipton Martin also in the house here. Again, Padma does really run down the history of Edna Lewis and everything that played out. They're going to have $300. They're going to cook for chefs and authors who were also inspired by Edna Lewis. So we don't know at the time who it is. It ends up being a table full of luminaries and people that we've seen on previous seasons of Top Chef or Top Chef Masters or even on this season.
Yeah.
But we ultimately see them. We're going to see the National Historic Landmark, her very kitchen. They're going to cook in that. So this is a really cool challenge. And I think in keeping with the Charleston or South Carolina connections, I'm sure there's some connection someone will tell us about with the Surgeon General. But this, I think, is a very direct connection and something that allows them not only access to the entire cookbook, if you will, of Southern cooking.
But also her kitchen, literally.
But her direct kitchen, right. The direct DNA that flows from this very person. So I think a really good challenge and probably a much better way to handle that sort of homage and the sort of tribute to the regional cuisine than maybe they've done in this season already. This is a very good thing to do. And I think that even the fact that the chefs had not heard of her, it didn't seem like the food was uninspired. It did seem like they really tapped in to what they wanted to do. And so I thought that that was great. I just really thought that the whole story was great. Shirley says her books are like poetry. I want to go right out and buy some Edna Lewis cookbooks.
I know, I do too. I was pretty inspired by that. I have a pretty huge cookbook collection. I'm looking at it right now, actually. And I would love to sort through some of those recipes. They looked really, really cool.
Well, what I like about this challenge too, I think that there's a flexibility to this challenge, as we see with the success of Sheldon's dish, where Sheldon isn't trying to make Edna's food. Sheldon is trying to make Sheldon's food in the spirit of Edna. Making that food with as much heart and soul that she would have put into her own cuisine, and people are very touched by that. I think that, Emily brought up before the idea of some chefs who go on Top Chef and they play it safe. I think that there's often, we see contestants who go on Top Chef and swing wildly for the fences. And it does not always work. And I think to go back to last week, we saw that last week with the barbecue challenge with the full pig, where Silva's like Asian inspired barbecue sauce no one was into. And that was a stretch. That was a reach. That was something that doesn't seem like it would be conventional within the confines of the challenge. But I think that there is room for interpretation here if you can sell your interpretation and if in terms of the fact that it's actually really, really delicious food, but also what's the story of that. I think that Sheldon does such a great job of that in this episode, and I think a challenge like this where the directions are make food that is inspired by Edna. I think it really opens up the door for a lot of different possibilities and also, sets the stage for, getting yourself into a position where you can make some big mistakes.
Yes, I was going to say, Emily, do you think that you could be inspired by Edna if you hadn't, let's say, hadn't been cooking for a while? Like maybe you, I don't know, had a back surgery or three. Yeah, maybe if we could just get back to that for a minute. Like not that we haven't featured that on the season at all. Yeah, you're groaning.
I mean, everything looked good, but the sum of all those parts did not turn out to be anything
special. Did not turn out to be nice, no.
It just kind of looked like a catering dish they put in front of you where they're like, you could get this dish for your wedding or you could do this other dish for your wedding as a main course. Like, I was just not inspired by that at all.
You were unimpressed.
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 And I love duck and I eat sweet potatoes all the time.
Yeah, it is difficult, I think, for Amanda, we're talking about, of course, who ultimately is the chef who goes home this episode. Amanda says she's inspired. She said, I haven't been cooking. I've been bartending. I had three back surgeries. We've heard this story from Amanda this season before. But she does say she's inspired. I think she's got all the right ingredients, as is noted. But there just is some lacking of a through line here, and it doesn't really come together for her. And that was really ultimately the story of the elimination in this episode. And I think, Josh, it is what you were saying. It's the flip side of this inspiration. You can get inspired by the ingredients. You can get inspired understanding the preparation or understanding the methods, but there's more to it than that. There's got to be some kind of feeling or emotion or connection between those ingredients that the chef brings to it, whether that's something from their person, their experience, whatever it is. And as you point out, Sheldon does a bang up job with that. I said as we were watching it, like, even if his food didn't taste that good, I don't think they could have sent him home, because there's just such a wonderful story and connection, and he's choking up, you know?
So right.
It is, I think Jim strikes a great balance with that. Silva obviously goes totally ham, or in this case,
fish.
Fish with
he
this,
goes
right?
Totally yes. Fish. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Snapper.
Yes. Not trash fish, nor monk fish. It looked like a really, really great crispy fish that he made here. I mean, that thing looked really remarkable, and everyone was all in on the crust and everything. Like, people loved that fish, it seemed like.
Yeah, and really, Silva, I think, plays a fantastic narrator in terms of really telling the story of why someone like Edna Lewis can be inspiring to him as a person, even though he'd never heard of her. Even though this was somebody that was new to him, he finds a way to relate this to his personal story and then turns that into great food. And I think that that's what was lacking from Amanda's Dish in some ways. And that's, I think, where a lot of other people could have gotten lost in this challenge, as you were talking about, Josh. But I think ultimately Silva does such a fantastic job of conveying how, even though he won a scholarship to the CIA, his father didn't want him to be a quote-unquote domestic. He didn't want him to be somebody that just cooked for other people. That wasn't going to be the lifestyle his dad wanted for him. And so here we are, like Edna Lewis, forging out against that as well, becoming ultimately the first African-American, like, celebrity chef. And Silva, even though he knew nothing about it going into this challenge, is able to relate very personally and very directly there. So I thought that was really fantastic how that all played out. We saw that being talked about between the preparation before the food was ever served, and it seemed like it boded really well for Silva.
Yeah. Seemed like it boded, yeah, fantastically for Silva. I kind of thought the Jim's was going to get it, though.
I did, too, and I also thought the Katsuji's dish was going to go over like a lead balloon. which is a much nicer way of saying something. It could have gone over really poorly.
So talk me through why you felt like this was dangerous water that Katsuji was getting himself into, perhaps, this week.
Dangerous watermelon,
indeed.
Yeah, and it's mentioned on the show. This isn't anything that I'm bringing to it. Emily, you agree? Are you agree here?
Yeah, I mean, Silva laid it out pretty plainly, just being like, listen, you're in front of a whole bunch of people who are very familiar Southern cooks. Don't screw this up. Don't pick something like this. You are asking to be judged in a way that many of us otherwise are not doing. So, like, don't go for, like, fried chicken and watermelon. It's just too
stereotypic.
Yeah.
Stereotypics, yes.
Yes, the stereotypics can go away. Ultimately, Katsuji does not fall on the slab for that. This is a guy.
He liked it. Yeah. Hey, Mikey.
Apparently, he could talk his way out of anything.
Well, Katsuji.
He really can.
Katsuji's a good talker. I doubt that he could talk his way out of anything. But he, I think that, again, like, I do think storytelling is not a central ingredient in doing well on Top Chef, but it's helpful if you can tell a good story. But I think he just cooked a really good dish. And there's the moment where one of the judges is talking about the stereotype of fried chicken and watermelon and how that's a dangerous place to go, but that he knocked it out of the park. And the camera's on Katsuji's face, and he's, like, making all these, like, really kind of, like, freaked out faces, like, oh, God, is this not going well? And then it, you know, takes a turn, and it's clearly a thumbs up on his dish, and he's kind of just like, whew, yeah, awesome. Yeah, no, that was totally what I was trying to do. I was just trying to beat the stereotype. Whereas to me, I kind of read it where he was probably like, oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, oh, boy, this could have been much worse than it ended up being.
Yes, yes, so it works out for Katsuji in the end.
Yeah, and I don't know, I was worried about Jim's. I was very worried, not just because I'm a big fan, but because, as we talked about, this seemed like a classic setup. He was really going through his dish and describing what could go wrong. It's like, well, if the broth isn't too clear, then we could have a real problem. And, you know, if I got to cook this consomme all the way through and blah, 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 blah. But ultimately, it's fine. Emily, did you have any thoughts about Jim's dish or going into the challenge or when they tasted it?
Emily, what is a consomme? I don't think I've ever heard of
it. It's kind of like a clear broth, isn't it? Like, I can't eat it usually because it has eggs in
Emily's
it.
Emily's allergic to eggs, for those who do not know.
No, like a chicken consomme usually has like an egg mixed in some way.
But it seems like it's a deeply infused broth.
It's like very enriched with a lot of flavor. And it's supposed to be clear and very bright, I think.
It's got to be damn good if that's what Gail is thinking about for the rest of the meal. She's thinking about a broth.
Yeah, but like...
You know?
I think
a broth, bro.
A broth, bro.
If you're reading into it and being nervous the way we were talking about with Jim's, we're like, oh God, the story's being told. What's going to happen to him? He had a lot at stake here because this was a Southern challenge. Like, this was serious Southern cooking. And that's
and
what
a hero
his,
of his, too.
Yeah, and that's his bread and butter. So, I mean, it really could have gone south and not been so great. So
his bread and honey butters?
That's why I looked at you just then, Josh. Yes, that's why I looked at you. I wanted you to say that. So,
oh, geez.
Well done, guys. Yes. Yeah, I was worried. I just am always worried. We're not in 2016 anymore, so they can't take Jim's away
from
us.
God. Oh, that's so dark.
I meant from Top Chef. Brooke is up third. Brooke and Emily are the pairing, as we talked about.
Correct.
They come out together. This is getting like a broken record. First they're together, then they're in the same team. Now they're coming out and presenting together. Brooke has made a warm salad. She's got some braised chicken, some lemon pudding, a blackberry vinaigrette. This is a mix. Hugh Atchison is here, and Hugh Atchison says, I can't tell if this is a dessert or savory. I don't know, I'm too sweet. Doesn't seem like it went over very well.
Well, it's a weird...
Smirk, smirk, smirk.
Yeah, it was strange. I mean, look, I'm into the lemon curd. Thumbs up on the lemon curd. The lemon curd is a great thing, but
that's your nickname, right?
They used to call me Lemon Curd Wiggler.
Lemon Curd Wiggler.
You know, I do think it's strange to toss that in with a chicken dish. Like, I can't envision where that works. I mean, I would love to eat an awesome like key lime pie or lemon curd pie after a chicken dinner. But on the same plate, it just feels like
You know what she needed.
Crossing the streams, and it would be bad.
She needed a biscuit. That probably would have saved it, honestly.
That's actually an interesting point. Yeah, to kind of sop up some of that. That would be pretty good.
I don't know. That I will not weigh in on that except to say I didn't taste it. But Tom, I worry that Brooke would be getting a rep from these judges. Like, this is a few times now where you've done this the same thing over and over. And when they're forming, they say they try to only base it on what's happened that week. But you're talking about chefs who, in many cases, already came in with a reputation. And it's, what are we seeing from you now? And we talked about how Shirley really hasn't gone fully to the top or fully to the... She did have some bowl of slap early in the season. But other than that, she hasn't really... We haven't seen the story emerge. But we have seen this emergent story from Brooke. So I will be interested to see where it goes in the future, because she's still my number one with a bullet in terms of thinking that she'll probably win this season. But this is the emergent narrative with Brooke right now. And the emergent narrative with Emily is not great either, in terms of Emily seems to be really struggling with stuff that I think she would seemingly be good at. This Southern style cooking. This is your wheelhouse challenge. Again, somebody we saw her a couple weeks ago with Chef Latta coming in and really having an issue that day. Here she is again with something that she felt very good about. I got to think, Emily, that that's probably worse for Emily, in that she thinks she did a good thing. She stands by it, and the judges say no.
Yeah, I mean, she really should have figured out her timing better for frying those chicken livers. That's really what it comes down to. I mean, if you're going to do it right, you have to do it that way. You have to do cast iron.
Yeah, and I think that really was what we saw play out, because Gail talked about how they tasted underseasoned, and I think that that gets hammered when you're talking about the deep fryer. You're obliterating a lot of that in favor of the flavor that comes from the deep frying, and I think that it was immediately noticed by the judges that were in attendance.
She's surprised when she's in the bottom at the end, but you do get that note from them right away that they've picked up on that. They ask her how she cooked the chicken livers. And Gail's going to pay her the compliment later on, where she's going to say, I totally get how you you had a vision for this. And I know why you have raspberry sauce on this plate and how that's going to work with everything.
Raspberry pie.
Yeah, raspberry.
Blackberry sauce.
I'm sorry, I got confused. I forgot that we were going to make a raspberry
what about
pie
the
later.
The
snozzberries, they taste just like snozzberries.
No upstate New York, Josh.
But you do see where it all makes sense, but it's the way that it was cooked that was the problem. But on paper, that does sound like something I would love to eat. You know, it seems like something that would be a really good dish.
It does, and I think that we'll just have to see again, in terms of emergent stories, is this the thing with Emily? Is she going to struggle because she's confident in what she's doing, but it's not what they want on the show? Or is there going to be something more to it? I think she's got it in her to step her game up, but she's going to have to step her game up. There aren't going to be too many places left to hide in the weeks to come.
Yeah, the competition is, you know, it's culling the numbers of the contestants
exactly.
that are there.
Exactly. 100%.
At a certain point, you see this every time on Top Chef, that like you reach a certain point and there really truly is nowhere to hide. And just like playing the middle really just gets
yeah.
you cut.
And you go home for a dish that probably tastes good, was well conceived, but there was one minor flaw with it.
Exactly.
In terms of the deep frying versus pan frying.
I mean, that's the caliber of people we're working with here, you
right.
know?
Right.
I think with Emily, we talked about this a bit last week as well, is this idea of she's, you know, is it just like we're going to see her just, you know, tank and it's just not going to work out? Or is this, you know, is she really present on the show because we're going to see some kind of upswing as we move forward? I thought that that's the direction we were going at the beginning of this episode because she does perform so well during the quickfire. You know, I thought that she did great in the quickfire. And then she strikes out here, and she had no sense that she was striking out either.
Right.
And the heartbreak, you know, on her face and the way that she's, you know, answering the grilling that she's getting at judge's table, I really felt for her. You know, that was somebody who clearly did not have any conception that she had whiffed with the judges. So I think it's going to be, you know, she kind of started off antagonistic on the show. I'm at a place with Emily right now where I just feel bad.
Well, listen, I think you have to be that way if you're a female chef. I think you have a really thick skin. You go into this world having to prove yourself, having to do all of this stuff. And then, like, to find out that, like, you know, you've screwed up in certain ways, that's a really hard thing to do when you're protecting yourself from all angles.
Yeah. I think on top of that, too, is there is this complex of, you know, veteran players versus
right.
rookies that they've, you know, instilled on them, or returning contestants versus first-time players, if you want to go by nicer terminology. And I think that that's stuck in her craw as well. But I think that she definitely comes off as somebody who has had to be tough for a while.
And yeah, and has sort of a raw nerve when
yeah.
they get underneath the skin a little bit.
Yeah, the chicken skin. This is somebody who's been fired from multiple jobs
right.
for back talk and
right.
for not being able to. So,
right.
you know, she's not good at... She doubles down when she shouldn't.
Love the double
like.
Down.
Yeah, she doubles down. She doubles down maybe when she shouldn't in previous instances. So it'll be interesting to see where she is in this competition going forward. Because she did well in the quickfire. So she clearly... And she's done well in other things. She clearly has the talent. But the question is the competition... Is she rightly suited for the competition right now? Or is this something that's going to emerge in the weeks to come? Speaking of returning contestants, though, John and Shirley were the next pairing. This is, I think, what you were talking about, Emily, which is the caliber of the competition left. Both John and Shirley got great comments
yeah,
about
it.
Their food. And yet neither were in the top three.
Right.
Well, there can only be three. But there's, you know, there's more than three great dishes on the board.
Right.
That's fantastic for us. And
yeah.
that's fantastic for the level of competition that Shirley and John don't even get mentioned in the mix for that when they did seem to nail it this week.
Yeah. So John, we see the history of his mom and why there is some resonance of the stuff that Edna did with John. We see even a great picture of his mom there marching. And John says, hey, this is not something that is direct to me, but I have a connection to a lot of the people, the women leaders in the vanguard of different movements. And my mom was there. He's going to pan broil a chicken. He's inspired by this preparation. Gets great comments. He uses watercress and sunchokes. Or watercress and sunchokes. The judges love it. Watercress is something very
That's
different.
That's something you put on your toothbrush.
Exactly, yeah.
That's my house sigil. It's a watercress.
Watercress.
Yes.
Yes, from House Tully.
Yes.
Yes. No, but the judges do love what John did. The judges also love Shirley. Shirley makes a chicken and rice with collard greens. Gail says the pepper and those greens are perfect.
The best is she says that, and Shirley, there's a great shot of Shirley just like nodding, being like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
like Shirley just knew that she killed it.
Yeah, Shirley's got to be saying, like, what do I have to do to get in the top three here?
Like, all I wanted to do was go out and buy some chicken thighs after that and just like pan roast the crap out of them for dinner.
Yes, yes. Emily makes a mean chicken thigh.
I'm staying here forever.
Never leave. Never leave.
And maybe also staying here forever, Silva and Sheldon are next. Silva is our winner. Sheldon is in the top three. You talk about a dangerous pairing here. Silva talks again about his relation to Edna and the way that he is inspired. He's going to do a fried snapper with some vegetables and a vegetable broth. The judges are really happy. We've got some luminaries here as we really didn't really really get into all the judges that are there. BJ Dennis is there, the chef we saw, the gullah chef we saw from earlier this season. We also see Art Smith in the house, right?
I love Art Smith.
We talked about Hugh Atchison is in the house as well.
Is that our first unibrow sighting of the season?
Snark, 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 snark.
I don't think it is. Is that your Hugh impression? Snark,
yeah,
snark.
Is he a Thundercat?
Yes. He hangs out in this neighborhood, right?
I've heard tell of this.
Indeed. Yeah, we've seen him here.
Yeah. So ultimately, they're there. We also have Natalie Dupree. We have Mashima Bailey. So we have this great mix of chefs and authors that are luminaries who understand this food. Everyone seems essentially universally to like
universally.
Silva. Universally. Yes. To like Silva and Sheldon's dishes. We talked about Silva's a little bit. Chef Alexander was really, really happy with Silva's dish, and so was Art Smith. And then Sheldon rolls in, and Sheldon gets choked up, talks about his grandmother. He's making this pork belly with cabbage and a cabbage jus. He's getting choked up as he's talking about it, like we said, and there's just no way he could have gone home.
Yet. No, no. Unless Top Chef is just, like, thoroughly heartless.
Waxing the floor for him to fall? Like, no.
Just, like, tossing banana peels in front of Sheldon. That they're green screening out of the final cut.
It's like Sheldon is playing a giant game of Mario Kart. Yeah. Like a red shell is going to hit him at one point. Red Sheldon.
Yes,
exactly. Which is not a famous comedian.
Well, the blue Sheldon, you know, hopefully he's not always in first place because then he's going to get knocked out. That's what the blue Sheldon does.
Right before the end. Blue Sheldon.
It's always frustrating to get blue Sheldon.
Yeah, so that's trouble. But yeah, he does really well here. That pairing did really well. The next pairing, not so much. Although Casey got raves for her flavor. It's Casey and Amanda. I thought Casey's dish looked great.
Yeah.
She had chicken stuffed chicken and dumplings. She elevated the cuisine by her, not totally traditional. But, I mean, they were just raving about the flavor of her dish.
They liked it. Yeah. Hey, Mikey, again. It looked really good.
Yeah,
it's on my team, so I'm happy.
It didn't look as good for Amanda. We see her standard pantomime in the kitchen. What's going on there, Emily?
There's just too much anxiety and nervous energy and a lot of movement. And it's really kind of funny to watch her be like, well, I really think of my food as very simple. And then she's like, wah, like all over the kitchen.
You know, give her some...
No, I feel her. Like, listen, I am not a graceful cook myself, and I totally get that. But, like, it is chaos.
Yeah, but you have to remember that she hasn't been in the restaurant business for a few years. I don't know if you'd heard that.
Are we going back to that?
I don't know if that had been said on the show.
Well, she keeps going back to it, so I guess we do too.
Yes.
No, but she's having a hard time.
No, I feel for her. I really do.
And it sucks. I mean, like, I get it. Like, it's a rustic cut of food. Those are some big hunks of sweet potato.
She said she likes the fork and knifing element. I thought that was just, like, what, utensils? You want to make food that is utensil usable?
You know, I get what she's saying to a degree. Like, I think that there is something fun about having a plate of food that you really gotta cut into.
Potatoes aren't the kind of food where you're like, man, I can't wait to really like cut into
well,
that.
Well, I guess that
unless
they,
it's not cooked.
I guess that they can be, but I think that the way that the duck was done,
Or underdone
as it were, but you know, that is kind of part and parcel with this. It's like it looked like it was sliced really thin. So the fork and knife that's going on with like those thin slivers of duck, that's not a fun fork and knifing as far as I'm concerned. Like you want to like fork and knife into like a piece of steak or a piece of chicken that's like, you know, like a big chicken breast.
No, even
or
something with duck you can do that
exactly.
If you kept it as a whole breast.
I mean, at that point, like then you're risking like really undercooking the thing.
But you're supposed to eat it medium rare.
Sure, for sure. But
unless you're my mother who freaks out about it and tells me about her friend who got a parasite from undercooked duck.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
But
we can talk about in Last Chance Kitchen.
The times that I've cooked duck, at least personally, I've found it very difficult to nail as easily in terms of the cooking as others. I mean, I don't know, maybe I didn't let it rest the
I think
right
it's
way
a difficult thing to do, especially you know, if you're not used to cooking.
Part of it is you don't eat it as much,
duck,
right?
Yeah,
as other
yeah.
protein. So you can tell chicken like you made over
yeah.
and over and over
but
again.
I think in terms of the fork and knife thing, I think that she had it reversed. Like
yeah.
I think that the duck should have been the fork
thicker.
And knife thing. That should have been thicker
yeah.
and then the sweet potato was smaller and slivered and
yeah, I didn't notice the thickness of the duck, but ultimately the dish's main problem seemed to be that, as Tom put it, like the sum of the parts was not equal to the whole. Like there were a lot of the right ingredients and elements in there, but it ultimately didn't eat very Southern. Didn't seem very Southern. I think, Emily, your observation of it looking like the kind of thing they'd slide out in front of you at a wedding tasting and being like, yeah, this is a dish that we could prepare. it didn't seem like these other dishes, which were really in a very singular vein and inspired.
Not to cross the lines up too much or anything, but it sort of reminded me of like a Chopped challenge where she got all these ingredients and she just needed to make something. And like, well, that's the dish that comes out.
And we'll get into how that plays into the Last Chance Kitchen, because that is ultimately what the Last Chance Kitchen style is with this. And it is Amanda's dish, because Amanda is the one who ultimately goes home, that is recreated in the Last Chance Kitchen. We'll talk about that just momentarily. But you're right. There were all these ingredients. There didn't seem to be a through line or a lot of flow between them. They were just kind of stacked together for your fork and knifing element, and that's what it was. The last chef to appear on his own, the man with immunity, Jamie. He's going to sous vide some
Jamie,
beef.
It's a good thing you have immunity, because not serving me a plate's a big no-no.
See? He didn't open his mouth very much when he did his Padma impression.
Do you like when he talks like that, when you're just around the house?
You like it when I talk Padma to you,
no,
Emily?
No, you never talk Padma to me.
Not enough. Not nearly
If
enough.
Only you talked a little more Tom to me.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
I am going to take my leave.
Insight.
Padma means savior. Tom means exit.
Insight. Yeah, yeah. Tom's our safe word.
I'm out. Nope. Yeah. Let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. I'm leaving.
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, boy. Awkward.
Calicchio!
Amelia!
Yeah. Fidelio.
But yeah, Jamie's having some trouble here. Jamie's got his sous vide beef deal, and he just misses a plate.
Yeah, we see this a lot. You get immunity, I don't think you're as amped up enough, you're not as dialed in.
He seemed bummed about it. He didn't want to, you know, miss a plate.
Well, that really sucks. Imagine that. It's like a rookie mistake, really.
Well, and that's why they keep calling them the rookies.
Yeah, so ultimately it doesn't go well for Jamie, but he's got immunity, so it doesn't really amount to anything. The beef was a little rare. The gravy was salty. Tom did like some of the elements of the dish.
Was it corn something?
Yeah, he liked the corn.
Yeah, and Tom, though, it rolls his eyes about the plate not being out there. So speaking of Calicchio and eye rolling, simple, it really is the key here, and simple can be good or simple can be bad. Some of the chefs pulled this off really well. Tom says it's essentially like a tightrope, you know, without a net. Like, ultimately, it seems like, yeah, or Frankie. It seems like something very small that you're doing, very simple, but it's just the pathway to doom, because it can be easy to screw up. And I think we saw that. Again, the top three were Silva, Jim's, and Sheldon. Gail really provided great comments on Jim. She loved it. We talked about that.
Well, she is Gail Simmons.
Yeah, doesn't she just provide great commentary on the regular?
Isn't it nice to know that my wife also has such a crush on Gail Simmons?
I think Gail's wonderful. She lives in this neighborhood.
Simpatico on that.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Everybody needs to move here. Yeah. But she did love Jim's dish. Silva's was also loved. Sheldon's was loved. We talked about this. Tom actually said, Sheldon, this is the best of you. Like, Foo Fighters style.
Sheldon Kim is the best!
So, but yeah, Tom was really impressed with Sheldon's dish, and yet he doesn't win. Silva does take the dub.
That's because Sheldon got Blue Sheldon. He got knocked out of first.
Blue Sheldon by Calicchio. When I say that word, nothing happened.
Yes.
Ultimately, the dislikes here, we talked about the problems in the bottom three with Brooke's dish. We talked about the problems with Emily's dish, and then Amanda's dish as well. Amanda's just didn't tug at the heartstrings, was the ultimate element, and it seemed like that was really the reason that Amanda lost. Silva did win. This, he said, is his favorite dish he's ever cooked.
That's great. Good for you, Silva. Now, that's awesome, because it clearly was a challenge that meant a lot to him. I thought it was a really touching scene where we're getting that confessional from him. It's right before everyone goes over to Edna's farm to start cooking and everything. And he talks about how, like, you know, there's a lot of great high-end restaurants that I've worked in. You don't see a lot of, like, black executive chefs. And for her to have been black and a woman in a time where that was very, very difficult, I thought that it was just a really, really great moment from him. So it was a great week for Silva, who I think is somebody to keep an eye on as far as being, like, a real threat in this competition.
Yeah, because he's, like, sort of like a secret ninja about it, because he's quieter. He's not as much
of a hothead.
He's
one of the quieter people on the show, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he's sort of flown under the radar in a lot of ways and just cooked consistently well for the most part.
So you're saying that the Quickfire winner, Chef Jamie, and the Elimination Challenge winner, Chef Silva, are both on my team.
Ah.
And one to keep an eye on.
You should be feeling
my draft team. I've got Shirley as well.
You should be feeling good. I feel like you've got a good squad.
I'm feeling good.
Good squad right there.
I got an eye for young talent.
Yes,
what can
you
I say?
Yes, you do.
But ultimately, and that's Chef Annie aside, of course. Yes. That didn't go so well for me season so much. But yeah, that's ultimately. Anything else from the episode before we get into Last Chance Kitchen? What do we want to hit that we didn't talk about?
No, I think Justin... Well, I guess we'll keep talking about Amanda as we move on to Last Chance Kitchen is probably the only big thing. Oh, did you notice the curious case of Silva's disappearing goatee?
I did not. Did you notice? Two curious cases in one? Do we already have a case?
I don't know.
Two mysteries in this podcast.
We had Casey Crumbles earlier.
Yes, the curious case of Casey Crumbles.
This case.
Don't be too flaky here.
It's in that same, you know, really tender, touching moment that I talked about before where Silva is talking about the importance of Edna and everything. And you're seeing him in the episode and he's got his goatee on. But in the confessional where he's talking about that, there's no goatee. Where'd the goatee go? What happened to the goatee? Who cooked the goatee?
It's a good question. Somebody sacrificed that goatee.
Somebody sacrificed that goatee. So, curious case of the disappearing goatee. Go back and check it out.
If you, Josh, it scares me, the level that you pay attention to the details.
I think it's just
talking
because he's jealous because he can't grow a
Well,
goatee.
No, I can grow facial hair, but it's just disgusting. It's disgusting.
Actually, what you've got right now, and honestly, it's starting to impress me a little bit.
It's ferocious.
I didn't even know you could do this.
How long has this been?
My neard is pretty ferocious. It's probably been about 5 weeks.
Yeah,
since
this is 5 weeks
shaved,
of work.
I guess. Yeah.
Well, what would 5 months look like?
I don't know. I guess we could find out. Emily, are you up for it?
Oh, no.
All right. We'll see.
Colicchio.
Yeah, Colicchio.
We're going to bail on that conversation.
Yeah.
Anything else? I did want to get you guys taking this because I made you watch it again. I swear, I am. This is my conspiracy theory. When we see in the credits and this finale will be in Mexico. We see like the outside of this plaza in a church, and I swear people are cheering, Dougie,
teach me how to Dougie.
No, I think Dougie had stayed in Mexico after the season and has become like a warrior chief.
Oh my God!
Yes, he's like a Colonel Kurtz.
Oh my God!
He's like hiding out in the middle of Mexico. Just people are rallied around
Colonel
his Texas red.
Colonel Kurtz.
Here's the question: what would you do if you opened the door out of here right now, walked into the kitchen, and found Dougie and Jim's together cooking?
Oh my God! That sounds.
What world does that become for you?
That world is you know that you're dead and you've just like crossed over into heaven.
Colicchio. I'm calling it.
Colicchio.
We're done. We can't do that anymore.
Colicchio. All right.
It feels too good.
Well, let's get into Last Chance Kitchen because I've actually watched Last Chance Kitchen this time, so I'm prepared to talk about it.
It's my fault.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. Antonio twisted my arm.
All right, so if you don't want to be spoiled by the Last Chance Kitchen, we're going to tell you who still remains and what happens after this week.
Okay, so we're going to start talking about that. Set it up, Antonio.
Well, the Last Chance Kitchen is the last chance for one of two chefs, one of whom we saw eliminated this episode, Amanda. The other is the remaining chef from Last Chance Kitchen, Chef Sylvia, making me very happy to see Sylvia again. Josh, you're not a big fan of the Last Chance Kitchen, but isn't it nice to see Sylvia on your television again?
It is nice to see Sylvia on my television again, except it's really my computer monitor because they don't even have the Last Chance Kitchen on demand. Unbelievable. You gotta go on the internet to do it. It's frustrating. Anyway, yes, great to see Sylvia. Here's another curious case. Did you guys notice?
No, don't do this.
The curious case of the disappearing booger. No, we don't want to go there.
Oh God!
You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
It's unfortunate.
If you want to watch Last Chance Kitchen and be on the lookout for that, that's up to you. Right?
There's a bogey on my tail.
So ultimately, the challenge is, as we often see on Last Chance Kitchen, let's talk about the chef that just got eliminated, why they got eliminated, and repurpose their elimination in some way to challenge them again and to see what happens next. And in this particular case, the issue with Amanda's dish is that the whole was not as great as the sum of the parts or whatever. It should have been better than it was based on all the ingredients that she had. She had the right tools, she just didn't get them in the right order. It was a jigsaw puzzle where the pieces weren't assembled correctly. And so Tom's challenge is, I'm going to give you a basket, a box, with all those ingredients in it again.
Yeah, doing his best Ted Allen.
You have 30 minutes. There's some black
chefs, licorice. Your time starts now.
Yeah. Top Chef's own, Ted Allen.
Yes.
Yes. He was on Top Chef before Chopped ever existed.
There you go.
That Top Chef can claim that, I think. Top Chef alumni in that respect. Not as a contestant, of course.
But part of the family. Extended family.
Chef. Yeah, friend of the Top Chef.
Friend of the chef.
And then what did he go on to host?
Food detectives. I love food detectives.
So this is very much a chop challenge with a box of ingredients. No mystery, though. A mystery to Sylvia. No mystery to Amanda. She knew everything that was in that box. And the goal is to not recreate Amanda's dish, but Repurpose them however you want. You have 30 minutes, get it done. And we see it happen.
And it's tense, right? I mean, talk about like needing the Colicchio safe word, but what do you say when it's Colicchio who is putting you in the danger zone? Because Tom is like really aggressive towards Amanda, it feels like, or at the very least.
She's kind of sassing him back.
There's some friction between these two. Yeah. It was uncomfortable.
Well, Tom initially said, we're going to talk about heart and soul, and I thought it was going to be like beef heart and like a filet of soul.
I
thought it was going to be a heart and soul dish, but it wasn't. That would be just fine by me, but yeah.
You have to cook beef heart and soul while playing heart and soul with your feet on the piano at FAO Schwartz.
Exactly.
That's where you're cooking.
It's a big challenge.
It's big stuff going on. Yes.
So ultimately, I don't know if Amanda was intimidated by Tom C. or not, but, and I said Tom C. because I didn't want to say the word again.
Sure.
But ultimately,
we're safe right now.
We see Amanda saucing it up. That was an issue with her dish before. Not enough sauce. There was an issue with the sweet potato. She makes a puree. She does greens and a sherry gastrique. She does all these great things, but she shaves a few onions.
Yeah.
And some shaved red onions.
And they're apparently just like raw.
You know, it's tough to be an onion eater.
It is tough to be an onion eater.
And this was not pleasing for Tom. This is ultimately the difference maker in the Last Chance Kitchen because Sylvia is making duck with sweet potato chips and some vinegar and salty greens with a spicy red onion. So all those ingredients are similar, but they're doing them a little differently. Emily, what did you think of the look of Amanda's dish in the Last Chance Kitchen? Did it improve at all?
Not really. It kind of looked the same. I mean, it wasn't the same, obviously, but it kind of had the same notes where you're like,
yeah. It's the sweet potato situation.
You're like, that looks fine. Good.
Yeah, this was not a thrilling episode of Last Chance Kitchen, if I'm being honest.
In terms of the food.
In terms of the food.
It didn't feel like a crazy challenge.
It didn't feel like a crazy challenge. Probably the craziest thing was Sam's lack of sleeves.
Yes.
Sam looked weird, man. I mean, I don't know what that pink cutoff you're wearing is, dude, but rock that. You know, go for it if you feel like it, but it's a strange choice, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's
bold.
Going on there. Bold choice.
Bold choice.
Yeah, bold choice to show the guns, but that's what we're doing on the Last Chance Kitchen.
I really liked Sylvia, like, being like, this is my time to get to know Tom Colicchio better. And, like, just, like, being like, hey, Tom, you want to tell me how to cook this thing?
Yeah.
I also like that this was her second duck she had ever cooked in her entire life.
Did
apparently.
Sylvia specifically move to America to be on Top Chef? Is that what Brooke said?
We kind of skipped past that. Yeah, we yada yada past that in the beginning, but that's at the start of the episode. It's like, man, Sylvia, that sucks so much. She literally moved to America just to be here. That was the implication
I got. But she owns a restaurant in Brooklyn.
Right, but she moved to America and opened those restaurants in Brooklyn solely so that she could become a Top Chef.
And maybe she wanted to be on Top Chef so she could get some quality, some QT with TC.
It's the long con.
It's the Tom con.
It's the Tom con.
It's the long Colicchio.
Yeah, the long Colicchio. Colicchio. Safe word.
Yeah, sorry. All right, we're going to pause down here. All right, anything else from the episode? Anything from the Last Chance Kitchen? Anything you guys want to talk about this season, Top Chef, in general?
Well, I think with Chef Amanda being only the second veteran claimed
here. Eulogy for Chef Amanda, Josh.
Well, it's interesting. As Antonio mentioned before, we did go and see the movie Fear last night. And this sound you're hearing is me punching myself in the chest like Mark Wahlberg. And as we were on our way to the movie, Antonio just made the shot-in-the-dark prediction that Amanda would be going home this week. So I bow to your clairvoyant abilities. But I do think that there was something in the air of, like, who is, you know, it's about time that a veteran goes. You know, it's about time that a returning chef is going to get knocked out again here. And who's the likeliest bet? And I think that Amanda, although she has appeared on Top Chef in the past, by her own admission, and several of these admissions, she's been out of the game for a while. She's been a bartender for the last year and a half. She's been injured. And, you know, this experience kind of rejuvenated her enthusiasm for cooking, and that's wonderful. But I do think that to a certain extent, it's almost like she came in here with the same handicap, not the physical handicap, but sort of the same handicap of the first-time chefs, that I don't know that she quite counted as a full-on, you know, full-fledged returning chef just because of how long she's been away from the kitchen. So I'm not surprised to see her go this early at all.
Emily, how about you? Same thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think she was sort of the next logical step for everybody.
Right.
And I saw her, you know, you can only twirl around like a top crazy, like in a kitchen.
It's
like
a stressful competition.
And I think that they were alluding to that in a lot of ways where everyone's just like, oh, there she is again. Like, poor Casey's always the person being like, oh,
right.
Amanda,
yes.
Like, chill.
Casey's like a human stress ball.
Right? Yeah.
Getting squeezed over and over.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of saw it going that way as well. But who knows? I mean, I'm interested to see what happens next. Do you guys have any predictions?
I was just going to ask you that because you said next logical step was Amanda. So then that the question that follows is, who's the next logical step?
Who, are we thinking a rookie or are we thinking an alum?
It's probably, I mean, I feel like it's tracking that it's like a lot of returning, you know, a lot of the first timers are going to get knocked out and you're going to be left with a lot of returning players. Like, I feel like Brooke is long for this show still. I feel
knock on wood, kid.
I know. I feel like Chef John is going to be in the mix for a while. Although Chef John really was quiet this week, Brendan Fitzpatrick on our Facebook page had commented about that. That it was a really slow, quiet week for Chef John, which was surprising after his big mac and cheese win. So I don't know. I could see it going south for Emily.
Yeah, next. That's kind of what I'm thinking
too. It's like either she's going pretty soon here or she's going to the top, which I guess that's literally, those are actually the only two choices. So that's kind of redundant. But that would be my bet. Like if I were a betting man right now, I would say that I'd be worried about Chef Emily next.
Yeah, Emily is ultimately what I think as well. And it is not because of her skill. We talked about it just today here that her skill level seems abundant. Like it seems clear that she's able to do this sort of thing. She's done well in certain of these competitions. But at the end of the day, there does seem to be things happening over and over again in this competition week to week. And I really think that the kind of thing that's going to stick with you is when you think you cooked a really good dish and everybody else said that it wasn't a really good dish or that it ultimately wasn't as good as you thought it was. So I worry that is going to resonate and really stick with her. She's upset at the end of the episode. They're going to go right into the next challenge as they, you know, at the next juncture. So it does seem like the kind of thing where Emily's going to have an issue going forward, and I would be concerned about that as well. So if I'm reading the tea leaves, Emily would be my choice as well. But
the goat tea leaves.
Some of these other chefs, the newer chefs, the first time contestants, I should say, there would be concerns there as well. So we'll see how that plays out. Anything else from the Facebook group, Josh? You mentioned.
Yeah, we got a ton of feedback this week. Let's go through some of this from Katie Beth Austin. Learning about Jim's right off the bat is making me scared for him in this episode. So Katie Beth was also feeling the same way we were. I think that was on. I feel like they're trying to make us feel the highs and lows of Jim's at every turn.
Well, they showed his wedding photo.
I know.
I mean, how are you not going to react to that emotionally?
Right.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, it's just...
Maybe we're seeing a Jim's winner edit.
I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows?
That would be fantastic.
Let's see. Also from Brendan Fitzpatrick, veggie meatloaf pass. Hard pass. Are you guys hard pass on the veggie meatloaf?
Whatever. I mean, what concerned me is I think she just said it was a vegetable protein. I don't remember her specifying exactly what it was.
So it could pretty much be anything.
Yeah, that was my number one concern about the veggie meatloaf. What am I eating?
Katie Beth Austin also hooked us up with a link, which maybe we can plug into the show notes, to a type of pasta called veggetti. Or perhaps it's a well,
I think Emily saw my face.
All right, well,
I would be very bad at poker.
There. It's basically in response to Katsuji zucchini noodles. You could use the veggetti to really do a better job at making that. Listen, I'm just reporting the
news.
Are
you clicking on that link?
I'm not going to. No,
namaste.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. Apparently, we missed a frat dad Jeremy commercial.
Oh, we didn't miss it. What does miss mean? I saw it. When I
didn't
fast
see
forward.
It. I
it's the same one
attention.
They showed earlier this year. It's the Patron tequila commercial with frat dad Jeremy.
Yeah.
Anything else from the Facebook group, Josh? Are you guys ready to wrap this up?
Meg Quinn says Tom really does need to work on his smiles, metaphors, comparisons, and whatever else he tries.
Smiles or similes?
Maybe the similes. The similes is probably what she's saying, and I'm just very quickly converting that.
Perhaps he's got his smiles down pat. Actually, his Calicchio. Smile game is pretty good.
Calicchio. Alex Grothbart says Brooke. This is in quotes. Brooke. Ah ha ha. LOL. Never mind. We're not sending you home. Which is kind of the feeling of if Brooke is going to be in the bottom three there. It did feel like Brooke was safe. Like, yeah. I was never really
worried.
Yeah, well,
she owned it. She owned it. She was like, yeah, too much.
If this had been Brooke's boot episode, we would have seen a lot more about that dish specifically.
Haley Strong said that she had some very... this was a very emotional episode for her.
It's got to be the gym stuff.
Yeah,
we got to get Haley back on the podcast soon. I'm sure that she's got some fun takes for us the further we've gotten into this. Steve Keynes had written in, I said last year that Chef Philip had the most punchable face of any chef testant ever.
But?
But is surely the opposite of that.
Okay.
Every
okay,
episode, good. She seems so legitimately invested in the theme of the challenge and really tries to better herself. Is surely the most likable contestant ever.
I love Shirley's heart so much.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, I was even watching with you guys, just like, oh, I love Shirley.
Yeah, she's great.
She went up and shook hands with the judges after they had given their descriptions of everyone and talking about the challenge, and she was just so fully embracing everything that was going on. I love Shirley. I'm so glad. That was my number one draft pick.
Okay. Yeah, all right, fair. Yeah.
She would be the most likable contestant on the show if not for the fact that Jim's exists.
Yeah, well, when you have an angel sent straight from heaven.
You know, it's hard to compete with that.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Anything else, Josh?
Nope, that's it.
Anything else from this week?
No, I think that's going to wrap it up.
Last Chance Kitchen here.
Last Chance Kitchen.
Last Chance Kitchen.
Well, maybe I'll go back to Last Chance Kitchen. I don't know. I probably should watch
it. I like having an extra 15 minutes of Top Chef to watch.
Sure.
And that's where I'm at on. If they put it on the TV, it would be a lot easier.
You know, the booger was something else, but Tom himself was kind of acting like a booger.
Can we start calling Tom the booger?
Tom was the booger in Sylvia's nose.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but he's acting like a little bit of a goober. Like, he's just trolling them in Last
Chance Kitchen. Oh, yeah, he has fun with it.
That is kind of fun. So.
I think it would be different if it were like a goofy host, but, I mean, you see a lot more of not only Tom's personality, but also the personality of chefs who have already been eliminated. People who didn't get as much screen time early on, they get to play in the peanut gallery. Sometimes you get talking heads from them. It really does bolster out a lot of what you could get on Top Chef. Would be nice if they would put it on TV, of course.
It'd be nice.
Yeah. Would be nice, but it's a web series, so that's where we're at. What about hashtags for this episode, Josh? What hashtag should people use if they want to tweet about this episode?
I just want it to be hashtag Colicchio, but I'm sure that plenty of other people are using that. We had Blue Sheldon was good as well.
Casey Crumbles.
Casey Crumbles was pretty good. We had Katsuji Board was in the mix early on. Any of those hitting you?
I like Casey Crumbles. I like Blue Sheldon.
The case of the Casey Crumbles or Blue Sheldon, or if you just need to use the safe word, I think you can just hashtag Colicchio and send it our way.
All right, so if you want to do that, you can tweet at each of us about this episode. I am at AC Mazzaro. That's with 2 Z's and 1 R. Josh? You are at Round Howard. Is that still correct?
That's still correct.
No 2017 changes for
no
you?
No 2017 changes. I remain.
No, man, you're verified.
I remain.
You're good.
I remain at Round Howard. Emily, who are you on the tweets?
I am Emlet, like an omelet, but an Emlet.
Okay, so an E instead of an O in omelet. And, and Mike and Kurt would love to talk to you guys about this episode as well. They're always tweeting about Top Chef. Are always happy to. Mike is at a Mike Bloom type. Kurt is at Kurt Clark. Those guys will be back on the podcast next week. I will not be here, but I look forward to listening.
Yeah, and I did not, because I didn't want to be spoiled, see if Kurt followed through on his promise, but I think he was going to talk about tweeting Top Chef. I don't know if he did last night, but you always are free to look. Kurt is engaging about the show on the Twitters, so definitely check out Kurt's tweets about Top Chef as we go week to week here.
100%.
Hondo. All right, well, if there's nothing else, thank everyone for listening. It was very fun talking to you guys and seeing you in person.
I'm looking forward to moving away from this awkward
so
microphone
setup.
This
was such a pleasure to lean over a small coffee table, all three of us.
Oh, my legs.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I'm having some lumbar problems right now. Doctor said I need a bacchiotomy, maybe three of them.
Oh, my God. Colicchio.
I'm sitting on a milking stool.
Colicchio! Colicchio! Colicchio!
I'm just going to press stop now, and goodbye.